My kingdom does not belong to this world. The statement by Jesus, we already know this. You know, he's speaking to Pilate, of course, but to us in a way too. We know his kingdom is not of this world, and yet we often act as if it is and get mad at him for not giving us the worldly things that we want and instead offering us what we need most. Gifts from his heavenly kingdom above. Jesus continues a little bit later, speaking to Pilate, "For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And then Pilate famously responds, kind of scoffing, "What is truth? What is truth?" There's no respect for objective truth then or now in our society today for different reasons. Back in those days, Pilate's saying this because he's operating under the assumption of what you may have heard before. It's called might makes right. He has all the power, so he defines what truth is, right? Whatever he says. Nowadays, it's not so much that, a little bit in some places of the world, but it's more a radical relativism. I make my own truth. You make your own truth. That's just the way it is. So no respect for objective truth. And that's problematic. Jesus says, everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. He is the truth. He is the truth. And the reality is that the truth will set you free. Inconvenient, oftentimes it is, but it will set you free, as Jesus tells us. It's true. Now, on the other hand, rejecting this marvelous gift from the eternal kingdom leads to enslavement to yourself, to your passions, to the things of this world. You just get caught in a down spiral. You never get satisfied. Many times it seems like the rejection of truth wins the day. Just look around today, right? But this is only an illusion. At best, a short-term victory. In the end, the truth always comes out, and the truth always wins. At the end of the Passion narrative today, we have this intense, beautiful, and beguiling encounter between Jesus, Mary, and John, where Jesus entrusts Mary to John, and then vice versa, John to Mary. This must have been heart-wrenching for all three, brutal, just brutally hard, knowing that Jesus is going to die and that what's next? What are we going to do now? Then a few moments later, Jesus says, "It is finished. It is finished." Right before bowing his head and breathing his last. Of course, if that was the end of the story, it would simply be a tragic end. It'd be another in a large string of tragic events that have happened throughout human history. And we wouldn't be here right now. If that was the end, why would we be here? We don't come and celebrate elaborate celebrations for various different people in the history books, right? But for this Jesus Christ, we do. And so, of course, it doesn't end there. We know there's more to the story, and God beautifully points toward this in the first reading today, where he's speaking through the prophet Isaiah. And this is the fourth. So we made it through all four suffering servant songs now this week. This is the fourth and perhaps most amazing. "My servant shall prosper. He shall be raised high and greatly exalted. He shall startle many nations. Kings shall stand speechless." Now, this is the same servant that amazes people since he is so marred beyond human resemblance. A man of suffering, accustomed to infirmity, one who is spurned and held in no esteem. One from whom people hide their faces. So, who in their right mind would believe that this servant is now exalted? It seems absurd to earthly eyes, but it makes perfect sense through Christian eyes. Since he gave his life as an offering for sin, surrendering himself to death and being counted among the wicked, the will of the Lord has indeed been accomplished through him. Because of his affliction and through his suffering, he has justified many, taking away their sins, and winning pardon for their offenses. Yes, he was pierced for our offenses, crushed for our sins. By his stripes, we were healed. Thought of as stricken and smitten by God, he was oppressed and condemned. He was harshly treated, yet he submitted and opened not his mouth. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, he was silent. Who would have thought any more of his destiny? Yet now he sees the light in the fullness of days. Because he has done no wrong nor spoken any falsehood, he stuck to the truth. Remember the truth earlier. So he stuck to the truth and was willing to suffer for those who actually did go astray, even though he didn't. In today's second reading from the letter to the Hebrews, this same servant now, he's arrived and fulfilled the prophecies. No longer we're pointing to him. He's arrived. When Christ was in the flesh, we heard, he offered prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to the one who was able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverence. God took on human flesh and all of its suffering so that he could redeem humanity. Back to the Hebrews text. Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And when he was made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for those who obey him. For those who obey him. It's kind of a key piece there at the end. Now we can see much more clearly the fruits of the servant's suffering that Isaiah was pointing to. Now we can see them very clearly. But at the same time, this doesn't happen magically. It's not like pixie dust. We must become obedient just like him. Remember, he became eternal salvation for all who obey him. Not for all who do whatever they want and claim to be Christians. For all who obey him. He is the great high priest who has passed through the heavens and has opened up the possibility for us to follow him. It didn't exist before. He's pierced the heavens and he's paved the way. And he did all this for us. He doesn't benefit from this. He's already perfect eternally. We benefit. It's all gift. Back to Hebrews again. Let us then hold fast to our confession of faith. We could say, let us then hold fast to the truth. He is the truth. And confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and to find grace for timely help. This throne is nothing other than the sacraments flowing out of the heart of the church. And now this links us back to the gospel passage where the pierced heart of Jesus, what's flowing out of there? That's the creation of the church. That's the sacraments. The water is baptism. The blood is the Eucharist. And also, well, just a note here. So remember back in the creation account, which we're going to explore a little bit tomorrow night, what happens? The Lord takes the rib of Adam and makes Eve, right? Out of Adam comes the whole human race. Out of the side of Jesus comes the church and the whole redemption of the human race. It's beautiful, the imagery that we have here. But also the institution of the church takes place when Jesus hands it over, so to speak, to Mary and to John. Right? This is your mother and this is your son. And they've carried it on to this day. So that's this throne of grace that they're talking about here. It's not just a figure of speech. It's a beautiful reality from day one, from Jesus, his pierced heart on the cross. We all need this grace and mercy, brothers and sisters, and we're very foolish not to take full advantage of Christ's salvific offering. I thirst, Jesus says from the cross. Some of his last words, very beautiful words. He thirsts for you to welcome him, the truth, wholeheartedly, and allow him to set you completely free. He didn't suffer for the fun of it. So don't let his sacrifice go to waste on you. I mentioned this on Sunday. He did it for a reason, so that you could flourish. Don't empty the cross of its meaning by rejecting it. The cross is beautiful, it's wonderful, it is our salvation. We must embrace it. So don't empty the cross of its meaning. Instead, obediently approach the throne of grace and walk along our great high priest in selfless service to others on the path to eternal joy with him forever.